War doesn't end when you leave the battlefield. The hardest fight comes after service. Identity, purpose, and tribe. Where do you stand when the uniform comes off? This is where we talk about it. No bullshit, no filters, just real stories from those who've been through it. This is the Great Guns Podcast with your host, James Scott.
Welcome to the Great Guns Podcast, where we dive into raw, unfiltered, and extraordinary lives. Today, we're talking to Kenny Brown. Hi, Kenny. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, mate. So, Kenny, we're just going to go straight into it. Life has thrown a lot at you, more than most people could imagine. Injuries, PTSDs, and endless setbacks. So through it all, what kept you moving forward, even though like everything just seemed impossible? What was that?
I think it was a combination of the way I was raised. I was always brought up to see things through and to never give up, mainly from my dad. Haven't seen the adversities that he'd gone through, yet he still kept going and kept us as a family together. It was a good ethos. And then I followed that into the army. And again, from the beginning, it was instilled into us that, you know, nothing is impossible. There's always a way to get around things.
And did you ever doubt that you'd get through to the other end? Or was it you just always knew?
I think after my first injury setback, I thought my life was over, as in career-wise. Obviously, things came about that changed that. So, you know, initially, yes, but you don't know what's around the corner.
True, very true. And was it kind of like resilience from within yourself that made you believe that? Or did you draw on that from other people? Or was there like any significant thing that kind of helped you through it?
Again, Dad said, you know, never be afraid to ask for help, but always try and help yourself first and foremost. It's only your own strength and determination that's going to get you to succeed.
Yeah, I remember from chatting to you and so on that like one of your setbacks was early days in your career, wasn't it? It was, you were just a young soldier. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what happened?
Yeah, so again, I joined the army at 16 as a junior leader. And once I'd completed training and went to battalion, I was told I was too young to go to Northern Ireland with them and that I'd be going back to the depot to work in a thing called the demo platoon. And it was whilst I was in this platoon, me and another young soldier had gone and attacked some recruits in a harbour area. And on our way back,
when you say attacked, it was you were acting as enemy.
Yes, sorry. A simulated attack on their harbour area. And while we were walking back, a female soldier in a Land Rover came flying out of nowhere, clipped the first lad and hit me side on. I think if I remember, she broke his leg and she broke my femur, 5 ribs. But as I'd fell backwards, my rifle got dug into the dirt while my fingers were still on the trigger, and it forced my wrist back and it shattered the ball joint within my wrist. And subsequently, it was because of that injury I was discharged, because I couldn't use my right hand at all to even eat, get ready, anything. I just lost all use of my hand. So I thought it was 43 weeks of grit and determination for nothing.
That's hectic. So how did that relentless kind of grind to recovery to get back, to end up back in the army? What does that resilience mean to you?
Again, time. I spent about a year really giving myself rehab. I bought things like juggling balls and squash balls. And I used to, daft as it may sound, but I used to juggle every day, a few hours at a time, just to get the rotation movements in my wrist. And I used the squash ball to build up the strength back in my hand to the point where I could actually use it again. And then at the time I was at Grantham, which was a TA camp, and I decided to try and join the reserves. And while I was in the process, I was married by then to a clerk, and she came down from work one day and said she'd spoke to her boss and they'd looked into it, and my medical discharge had been changed to an administrative discharge, which meant I could rejoin the army, which honestly, it was like I'd been told I'd won the lottery.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you said that was a year that you spent.
Yeah, a year took me. I was discharged in July 93, and then I rejoined in April of 95.
Yeah, and so how long were you? You were in the army for? Was it?
I can't remember. Literally, I did a year, but it didn't really count. In fact, technically, I didn't do any time in the army because I was discharged before I was 18. So your man service doesn't kick in until 18. In fact, technically, I probably did about 6 months in the army.
And then, but once you rejoined, you were in for quite a while, weren't you?
Yeah, just shy of 21 years.
Okay, yeah, so almost full length. Mm-hmm. So from, you know, kind of basically, I know your story, you kind of ended up, your army career wasn't kind of by choice. It was more to do with having to leave because of the injuries and that you'd sustained over your army career. Kind of from losing your army career, if you like, to kind of your new mission where you with cadets, because I know you're actively involved in cadets and have been for quite a while. Kind of how did you rebuild your sense of identity after spending all that time, like 21 years in the military? You know, that's your identity, that's becomes who you are. Then having that kind of taken away from you, how did you rebuild your sense of ID?
Initially, I didn't think I had an ID. When I was initially told that my career was over, I just felt my guts had been wrenched out of me. But then I knew I had to get focused on getting my kids resettled, get my family moved. So at the time when I was initially getting ready for discharge, I had too much to think about in regards to my family. It was once I finished with that, I then had nothing. And only by chance, Hell for Heroes contacted me. Just jumping back, when I was living in Catterick, I literally lived about 500 metres from the Phoenix House, which is Hell for Heroes Rehab Centre. So I was down there constantly because I was getting no support from my family officer. In fact, it got that bad, I reported that. Because I was just not getting the advice I needed. And I was in a really dark place, but like I said, Pathfinders, Hell for Heroes rang me up and asked me if I would like to take part in this Pathfinder course. It was a new thing that was being trialled. It was all about identifying your setbacks and your demons and how to create coping strategies and how to move forward from there and turn all the negatives into a positive. And it was while I attended the first phase of that I just happened to mention, oh, there's an army cadet detachment at the bottom of my street. And I said, I'd love to go in there, you know, and see if I could try and help some people. But at the moment, I'm walking with a stick. I'm in agony. I don't want to give the impression to the young cadets that, yeah, join the army and you could end up just like me, you know. But they convinced me to at least make an inquiry about it, which I did.
And you've been there for quite some years, I know, because obviously that's how you and I have met, is through the Army Cadets. And I know from having worked with you, I know the kind of person you are and the passion that you put into it. And you just want to see the kids do well and develop from strength to strength. Yeah. So if you don't mind, if we can kind of go back, you know, your dark, I know your story. I mean, I don't know whether you want to to delve into that particularly. I know you had a very dark moment. Would you mind telling us a bit about that and kind of what flipped the switch for you to kind of go, no?
Yeah, once I'd got sorted, like I said before, I had my family, the move and all that to think about. So I didn't have time to dwell on things. But once we'd got moved, the house was sorted, the kids were enrolled in schools, and my wife had gotten a job. And I just sat there, and it was me and the dog. And then reality kicked in, and it was like I'd been stabbed in the guts. You know, I'd lost. I'd worked really, really hard to get myself an identity, to make a name for myself, as in, this is a guy you can trust. This is a guy who will work really hard for you. You know, to have all that just destroyed in a heartbeat. And I thought, is this going to be the rest of my life? You know, am I going to be stuck in this house in constant pain, being a drag on my family, you know, a drag on my kids, because we were restricted to what we could go and do, so we couldn't really go and enjoy ourselves as a family, and I blame myself for that. So I just sat there, and I take quite a lot of medication, and each month I line everything up and I sort it all out, and I just lined all the strong painkillers up, and I thought, there's a bottle of vodka in the cupboard, you know, I could just drink that, take them, and then me wife and kids don't need to worry about anything anymore. And I just, it went over and over and over all day, and thankfully my wife came home from work early, and I quickly put everything away, and just by chance, literally 2 days later, that's when Phoenix House rang me. And when I got asked to come on the course, the first day, luckily the course was only small, there was only four of us, and there was three instructors, and the three instructors had all gone through either traumatic events in their lives, or they were suffering from PTSD, and they had gone through a similar program, and they were then doing basically a teach back to other people like us. And honestly, by the second day, I was just so emotionally drained. It was unbelievable. Every one of us, you know, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, we bawled our eyes out at each other's stories. And it was just by chance, and it's funny, but I'd gone to the toilet, and one of the instructors had come in, and we were typical blokes, they were at urinals having a conversation. And that's when I brought the cadet thing up. And it was a lad called John, who was a former major and OC in the Coldstream Guards, who'd had really bad problems on his Iraq tour. And he said, oh, I've got a mate in the cadets. Do you want me to give him a bell and ask him if he'll ring you? And I said, well, can't hurt. I said, I'd rather get, you know, a bit of heads up before I commit to going down and speaking to the local detachment staff. So I'd finished the course on the Friday, because it was 5 days, went home, and then on the Saturday night I got a phone call from this this guy called Neil, and I thought, you know, he was going to be like a detachment instructor, and it turned out he was actually the commandant of Lancashire Cadets. And he was on the phone for 3 hours, and he was fantastic with me. He told me the issues that he had in his life and how he'd overcome them, and through support of Health for Heroes and other agencies. And he gave me the courage to then make the decision to email the ACF, and I was invited down for an interview, and the lady who interviewed me was the OC, and she was an occupational therapist, and she was absolutely fantastic, and she just completely flipped everything that was going on in my head upside down and showed me all the positive outcomes that I could achieve if I was to join the cadets. So I made the decision to go for it. I thought, what's the worst that could happen? I know I've got my limitations, but at least it gets me out of the house and hopefully gives me a purpose in life.
Thanks, Kenny. I appreciate you sharing that. If if there's another person out there, another vet that's just left, kind of in a similar position to where you were, where you're sorting yourself out, because there's always that busyness, you know, life's changing, you've got to sort things out immediately. And when the quiet time starts to settle in, what advice would you have for someone that's kind of there to help them not have to sit there and think, it'd just be easier if I did?
I would say get the bravado out of your head that the force is instilling you, and that injury, illnesses are not a weakness. To seek help and to ask advice, you know, and ask for help, it takes more courage for you to admit you've got a problem and to ask for help than it does to bottle it up. By bottling it up, it leads to other things like turning to drink, for example. I've lost friends who have committed suicide because they've been suffering and they've gone down the drink route and they've killed themselves. In 2009, when I was diagnosed with PTSD, I stopped drinking completely. And I would say to whoever's struggling there, don't let drugs and drink help you. Yes, medicated drugs, but you've got to ask for help. And don't suffer in silence, because eventually it will eat away at you. And you'll go down that black hole and you won't be able to get back out.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you do realize in the army that to make you efficient, they've got to put that bravado in you and that, you know, kind of man up and get on with it, for obvious reasons. But yeah, it's good that you're willing to change and go, hang on, there is a problem. And what about for family? If you could go back to when you kind of came out and you'd settled everyone and all of that, and you were kind of going through that dark time, is there any advice for people, you know, family members of service personnel that are kind of in the same scenario? Is there anything that you could offer them that might be able to help them to help their partner or, you know, that might be suffering?
Again, as part of the Pathfinder program, I was asked to come back and actually sit in on a session with partners, family, which were either made up of parents, grandparents, aunties, uncles, of people who were suffering. And I sat there to explain what signs to look for, triggers that were setting them off, and then how to help them as best you can. And obviously I didn't go in depth with any of the medical side of things. The staff did that with the parents and everybody. But it's probably the best way to get across to people that if they've got somebody in their family who's ex-forces and they're struggling, reach out to people like Help for Heroes and ask for advice. I don't know if they still do the courses because after lockdown, the centre closed down and they mothballed it along with all the other centres around the country. However, they are still active online and will give you support where needed. But they're probably the best people to speak to, and do it straight away. As soon as you start, because you know your son, your daughter, whoever, you'll see the signs. I know my wife saw the signs in me well before I realised I had an issue. And if it wasn't for her, when I initially started with PTSD, I probably would have ended up losing my job because of the way I went on. Either I would end up in hospital because I was just working all hours God sent so I could avoid my family. And again, avoidance is a big sign, because I never got physical with my family, but I snapped at them all the time over stupid things. You know, I would shout at my children if the toys were laid out in the sitting room. You know, if there was a paper laid out, I'd argue with my wife, why is that not in the paper? You know, stupid, petty things that get in my head get amplified. And you'll realise that in your children. You know, you'll pick it up because they're your children. You know exactly how they think, how they act, and you'll see the first signs of it starting to manipulate them. So I would then reach out straight away and get some advice so you can help support them.
Thinking, like, you've been through it, you've come out the other end. I mean, I know you still are, like, from a physical side, are struggling with the injuries that you've had. They've obviously had repercussions as you've gone on. But what is your one bit of advice with kind of moving further on? Because, yes, you can go out and you can get the help. And obviously you go through a program. Hopefully you get that kind of support. But, you know, you're going to get to the other end and you're still going to be tipped out. You know, you kind of hit the end of the line and now you've got to go out and do it yourself. What advice would you have there for someone who's in that position? They've kind of realized they've had a problem. They've found a bit of help. They've got through it. They've maybe attended some, whether it be courses or sessions, that sort of thing. But they're still going to end up one day kind of being on their own, aren't they?
Yeah. I would say, look at what you enjoy. Look at what's out there. I mean, if you are physically injured and can't work, there is loads of volunteer opportunities out there. Again, because of the cadets, I went to a forum where there was youth organisations who in the area and what they could offer. And that led me to volunteer with an LGBT group of all people. You know, and while I was in the army, it was at that time, it's instilled in you that made you very homophobic. You know, gays shouldn't be in the army, lesbians shouldn't be in the army. There was certainly no mention of anything to do with transgender. And by working with this youth group, they completely opened my eyes and changed my whole thought and beliefs. And that was just by going out there and bumping into a random youth group who I would never in a million years think of volunteering with. So, like I said, you're going to have to, if you concentrate on getting yourself mentally fit and get your strategy set up on how you deal with things and then go out and have a look. It not only gets you out of the house, it gives you a sense of purpose, something to get up for on a morning. Because anybody can just lie and wallow in self-pity. And I know it's hard. You know, everybody's life story is different. But sometimes you do need a bit of a wake-up call and have that self-belief back into your head that you can go out and you can do things that will help people and help yourself. I use cadets as a mental health medication. Because
I was going to ask you about the cadets. What does it bring to you? Honestly,
it's having been on mental health medication and the stigma that comes with that. I never ever wanted to go on it, and I got off it as fast as I could. And I used, like I said, cadets, and the same when I was at the depot, I used the recruits as mental health medication because they gave me the energy and the strive to succeed. And when I used to see them going off the square at week 14, or I see the cadet walking out the door at 18, my hard work and determination has done that, and that's what gives me the drug to fight my mental health illnesses.
I can wholeheartedly agree with you there. The cadets, when you have a 12-year-old walk in, and I think you said once where they can't say boo and they kind of shy away in the corner, and then you get them where they're leaving, and you know they don't necessarily have to go and join the military, but they just walk out and you can see that they're a confident young adult, kind of ready to take on life, and they're being taught resilience and everything else. I can see where you get that from. So, Kenny, going forwards, what's the future look like for you?
Future's really, really good now. I've been in the cadets 8.5 years, which is actually quite short. And in that time, I've jumped through the ranks. People have have realised that I can do things and I'm a hard worker and I'm getting that identity back. And because of that, I very quickly took over a detachment. I then took over as a thing called the training officer, which is all the planning side of things. And finally, what I wanted to achieve, which was to become the company sergeant major, because I'd looked at people who had been previous in that role and I thought they were really poor. The standards were really low. And I knew without blowing smoke up my backside, I could do a far better job and turn things around. And I had done. And Burma Company, when I joined it, which is my local company, were shockingly low numbers. The staff were miserable. The standards were shocking. And it was myself and these two other lads who took over command appointments within the company, helped, and we reshaped everything. And then ultimately, Christmas 23, I was invited to come in for an interview for the job of the Regimental Sergeant Major. But typically, fate thought otherwise and said, no, you've been all right for a while, we're going to hit you with an illness now. And so that knocked me back a year. But then, just before summer camp last year, the gentleman who got the place instead of me had decided to step down. So I went for an interview against three other people, and I was finally given the position of Regimental Sergeant Major. So I'm now in a position where I can influence people and influence changes. And it's very similar to a job that I got in the Army, again, after I got injured and moved into a role which I thought was going to be horrible. It turned out to be the best role I'd ever done. I was able to mentor people, coach people, improve people's skills. And that's my main mission over the next 3 years in this role, is to use the skills I gained there and put it into practice and hopefully get people to, the hardest part is getting people to buy into it. Because a lot of people are setting their ways and don't like change. So that's going to be my biggest hurdle. But hopefully, if the Commandant stays on after 3 years, I'm going to extend and I can stay on till for another five, up until the fifth year. And then after that, we'll see what comes.
Oh, brilliant. But I think you are perfect for that role, knowing you as I do. And obviously, you can bring all your experience from the forces across, and manage people. And I know you are passionate about it, and I've seen it about mentoring people and bringing people along. And I think you'll definitely get the buy-in from people. You are that kind of guy, and I know you got high standards and you want things to work. So it's great that you're able to bring those experiences from your past into a youth organization like this. So yeah, no, I think it's absolutely fantastic, and I wish you absolutely all the best, Kenny.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you. I always enjoy chatting to you. We do need to keep it shorter than our usual chats, because we'd be here for hours. So again, I really appreciate you coming on, and appreciate you kind of opening up about your past and what's gone on. And it's great to see you where you are now, and leading from the front. Brilliant. So thanks very much, Kenny.
Thank you.
That's a wrap, folks, and a big thank you to our guest. Remember, keep moving forward. The fight's not over until you decide it is. Till next time, stay bold, stay fearless, live life like it's too short for half measures. This is the Great Guns Podcast, signing off. And remember to subscribe to join our tribe.